This is Diane Flint. I grow heirloom cider apples and make cider in the southern Appalachian Mountains of Virginia at Foggy Ridge Cider.
Welcome to Wine and Dine. My name is Lynn Creelo Chamberlain, host. You're listening to iWine Radio. We're going to talk today about what I think is probably the most exciting beverage discovery I've made in years. And it's surprising that I haven't made this discovery a long time ago, but I really don't see it on shelves in eastern North Carolina where I live. So today, thanks in large part to Dave McIntyre, the wine columnist for the Washington Post, who turned me on to Foggy Ridge Cider, which is in Douglasburg, Virginia, right over the border of North Carolina into Virginia from Mount Airy. We are going to have a conversation with cider maker Diane Flint in the Virginia Blue Ridge Mountains, where she combines innovation and tradition using over 30 American, English, and French apple varieties to create traditional hard cider crafted with modern techniques. And Diane, I want to start by telling you, and this was a mind-blow comment from my husband, I don't drink that much beer, but when I do drink beer, it's got to be a lager because I don't really get off on sweet that much. My husband is also a lager person, but he said to me, I could drink your cider, Foggy Ridge Cider, instead of beer and even be more satisfied.
Oh, that is such a compliment. That is such a compliment. And I think that highlights, Lynn, one of the best qualities of cider. It's very quaffable. It's very drinkable. It can be a complex beverage, and we seek to make a very wine-like, nuanced, and complex cider from our many cider apple varieties here at Foggy Ridge Cider. But at the same time, it's not a heavy, fussy, high alcohol, overwhelmingly rich beverage. It's just fun to drink.
And I don't remember, are they 7% alcohol? Or does it vary?
Fermented beverages depend on the sugar of the originating fruit or the expressed juice of that fruit. So wine, most of the wine you see, other than that high alcohol wine that seems to be losing popularity, thank heaven,
yes,
is in the 14-15% range. And that's because grape juice has a sugar level that when you ferment the grape juice, this is the alcohol level you end up with. And apples, depending on where the apples are grown and the variety of apples, you will get from our orchard, we're getting 7 to 8% alcohol. Some of our higher sugar apples, like the Hughes crab apple, which is not the little green hard apple that makes your stomach turn sour, but a wonderful, richly flavored cider apple that Thomas Jefferson grew over at Monticello in central Virginia. That Hughes crab apple is about 19 bricks, bricks being a measurement of sugar. So, you get 9%, 9.5% alcohol from that particular apple. Also, apples grown in really hot climates, say in California or in the eastern part of Washington and Oregon in the high desert there, you'll get a bit more sugar from those apples. But in general, the cider that is fermented from just juice, that's not diluted in any way or sweetened in any way, is going to be in the 7 to 8% range.
I live on the coast of North Carolina, and when I used to be an avid gardener. I don't have time to do that right now in my life, but all the catalogs would say I'm in zone 8, but I know that where I'm at, zone 8 would get fried in the summer here, and I was better off with zone 9 plants that wouldn't die on me.
Yeah.
But the apples, they really won't grow where I'm at, right?
Well, there are some southern apples, and you are, gosh, a foremost expert on old southern apples, lives about halfway between you and me, Lynn, in Pittsboro, North Carolina. And that, of course, is my friend and colleague, Lee Calhoun. Lee published a book, over a decade ago called Old Southern Apples. And it's just been released in an updated form. It is well worth a purchase if you're interested in apples. And he has researched extensively and has a lot of experience himself growing apples that are suited to southern climates. And yes, there are a few apples that will grow in the eastern part of North Carolina,
okay,
and even in the deep south, in Mississippi and Georgia and Alabama.
Really?
And Lee is an expert on all of those.
Okay.
But here at Foggy Ridge, we're, of course, in a very different climate.
Yes.
We are the southernmost zone 5.
Okay.
And, of course, we're zone 5 due to elevation. We're at 3,000 feet elevation.
Wow.
And our climate is a lot closer to the southern part of New England,
wow,
than it is to Chapel Hill or Pittsboro, North Carolina.
Oh, my gosh. Do you have any snow on the ground right now, or did you get snow in the last week?
Well, on Monday, it was -8 degrees,
yes,
when I woke up. Mm. And we had some snow in the corners, but we didn't have snow because we had such a blowing gale. I think it blew all the snow over to Danville. But yes, we have a cold winter. It is, though, what I would call a southern Appalachian winter.
Okay.
We have bitter cold. We have lots of wind because we're getting that wind coming from the Midwest. You know, Bluefield, West Virginia is very similar weather to ours, and that wind comes right over the Appalachian Mountains to our orchards, which in some ways is very good. Apples need a chill period, especially some of the cider apple varieties that we grow here at Foggy Ridge Cider.
I understand that your facility is open on weekends, April through December. So when the trees are blooming, that has got to be beautiful to look at.
I have to say that the spring, I like every day of the year. I am a real nature lover, and there's not a season I don't love and cherish all the differences and uniqueness of that season. But spring in a fruit orchard, especially an apple orchard, is just magical. Bloom here is in late April, early May.
Okay.
And people think of an apple blossom as being white. You know, you picture these kind of pale pink, very pale pink, creamy white blossoms on a hillside. But if you walk through my orchard, especially our old orchard that has all 30 varieties in it, which was our test orchard, where we planted out these cider apple varieties to see which ones would grow and which ones would make great hard cider, you can look at the blossoms, and each one is different. They smell different. Some of the petals are striped with this beautiful carmine, scarlet striping. Some are deep pink. Some are pale pink. Some are creamy, almost a yellowy color, and some are just stark, stark white.
I am dying to know what you did. What were you doing in your life before Foggy Ridge Cider, or what brought you to Foggy Ridge Cider? How did you learn to become a cider maker?
Well, you've got lots of questions for me there, Lynn, and I'll start with what brought me to Foggy Ridge Cider. And I'd have to say it was my father. I grew up in a very small town in Georgia, right on the Chattahoochee River in western Georgia, kind of a territory like around Winston-Salem, a little bit rolling in the Piedmont part of Georgia. And my dad grew up on a farm. My grandfather lived about 15 miles from us, and that farm was very much part of our life. And my dad, though he was an engineer, he was really a naturalist, and he loved nature. He loved plants. He loved growing things. And from my earliest memories, I was always planting something, gathering seeds, grafting a tree or a shrub.
Wow.
And those memories of living close to the land and growing things, especially growing things that will outlive me.
Oh, yes.
Those are memories that I carry through my life. And I had a long career in the business world, but I always wanted a final career, a last career, that took me back to those gifts I got from my dad.
Mm. The picture on the page of your website that is about food and cider pairings, is that your parents?
No, those are wonderful friends who sadly have passed away. But when that picture was taken, that's Hal and Fran Strickland, who were neighbors up here in Southwest Virginia. They lived over on Belcher Mountain Road, and actually Fran is still living, but Hal passed away at age 96.
Wow.
And he was driving a tractor in the last year of his life and knew all about plants and was just a really well-known birder. And I think when he was 94, he and Fran was 90, they went to Antarctica bird watching.
Oh, my.
I have them on my website because I think that's a model for growing old that I value. And I hope I'm dealt the cards that enable me to do that.
And who was it that I was reading about on your website that had a cider every day of their life and which they attributed part of their longevity to? I don't remember. It was one of the founding fathers.
Oh, it was John Adams. Everyone likes to, all cider makers in the country like to talk about John Adams because he famously said he drank a tankard of cider before breakfast, which we think is probably at least a pint and a half. So he was a happy man.
Oh, we're about to go to a short break here, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Diane Flint, cider maker, proprietor, founder of Foggy Ridge Cider. And when we come back, let's talk about the ciders themselves as the stars here. Sirius Cider, First Fruit Cider, Sweet Stamen Cider, Foggy Ridge Handmade Cider, and Pip and Gold Dessert Cider. We'll be right back with Diane when we come back here. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Eric Asimov. I'm the chief wine critic of the New York Times.
Thank you, Lynn, for your interview. That's wonderful to speak about Boulard Cabernet.
Hi, my name is Dave McIntyre. I'm the wine columnist for the Washington Post, and you can reach me at food@washpost.com or through my website, which is dmwineline.com.
Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo-Chamberlain. Welcome to Wine and Dine. We are continuing our conversation with Diane Flint, cider maker, Foggy Ridge Cider. The website is foggyridgecider.com. And much to my joy, and learning about and preparing for our conversation today, I've learned that not only can you buy the ciders direct, even though there is distribution in several states, but they sell trees. They sell apple trees. They sell heirloom, custom grafted apple trees. You need to place your order by, I believe it's the middle of March 15th in order to receive them for fall. And they have recipes, really, really good ideas, recipes. And Diane, I was so struck by how dry the Sirius cider is. I wasn't expecting that.
I think that's a new taste for many people, Lynn, and one of the exciting things about being in the cider world is making a wide range of ciders. When we opened Foggy Ridge Cider in 2006, we knew that most of the people who came in our front door probably had never had cider before, or if they had, they'd had a more commercial kind of factory cider that would be comparable to a macro beer, Bud Light or something that was just a very simple beverage. So we wanted to showcase the range of what apples can do in the bottle. And Sirius Cider is our driest cider. It's less than 0.5% residual sugar, which puts it at the brut end, or really extra brut end, of the champagne world. If you think of sparkling cider as being a champagne-like beverage.
Give us an idea for pairing with food.
Well, think about what you would drink with a dry champagne, and you have that wonderful tart, tannic, sometimes citrus flavor in your mouth. And what do you want with that? Well, I want something very creamy, and it's nice to also have something creamy that has a tangy note that marries up well with the citrus notes in the beverage. So with Sirius Cider, I've, of course, being a cheese lover, think about goat cheese.
Oh, yeah.
That creamy, milky richness of goat cheese, but the little tang that is part of that flavor profile. I also think about fat and salt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When you have a really dry beverage, you want something full in your mouth to counterbalance that somewhat austere dryness. So I think about, people say, what do you like best with serious cider? And I say, palm frites, you know, French fries.
Oh, yes.
And even the kind of salty, fatty nibbles that you have before you have supper, even if you're at home and you dig out some of those cheese straws that you have left over from Christmas, cheese and crackers, or even, more elaborate crab cakes. Anything salty and fatty is wonderful with serious cider. One of the best pairings I've had with that was actually a German dish, a veal schnitzel, pounded veal cutlet, dredged in flour and fried in a lot of butter, but with lemon juice, with a beurre blanc that had a lot of lemon juice in it, and that fattiness of the pork and the butter, but then the tanginess of the sauce was just a perfect complement to serious cider.
Mm. And we should tell people that these ciders, the first three we're going to talk about, are bottled in 750 milliliter bottles like a wine bottle is.
Exactly. And it's a sparkling, all of our ciders other than our dessert cider, which is technically a port, and we'll talk about that later, I'm sure, are sparkling. And they are sparkling at the level of a frizzante or a cava. So they won't have that exploding the cap off like you would with a bottle fermented champagne or sparkling wine from California, but they have a wonderful effervescence that carries the apple flavors and the other notes of the beverage around in your mouth.
Is the CO2 natural, or is it, do you put that in before you bottle it?
We ferment our cider all in stainless steel, and we ferment everything dry in our stainless steel tanks. And one of the things about cider that's very important is to have a very clean fermentation. Cider, of course, doesn't have the alcohol of wine. You don't have the protection of a higher alcohol to prevent spoilage. And, of course, we want to minimize the use of sulfites. So after we ferment our ciders dry, we blend, and we blend much like a champagne maker. I'm a firm believer in blending for cider. I think there are a few apples out there that make good single varietal ciders, but not many. And the best ciders in the world, in my view, are blends of 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes more apples, just like a wonderful champagne would be a blend of many different ferments.
The first fruit is fruitier and with a little bit more apple aromas, a little bit higher residual sugar, but it's still quite dry.
It is. I think of it as like a fruity Sauvignon Blanc. It has the acidity from the Virginia crab, the Hughes crab apple that we use in that cider, and the high acids that you have in the Harrison apple, famous old colonial American cider apple that we also use in that blend. And it is a little bit fruitier.
Mm.
And with that cider, because it can carry a bit more robust flavors, I think of all the simple foods that you eat at home, or you order at a restaurant on a Tuesday night, not fancy food, but things like grilled chicken with olive oil and Mediterranean flavors, or a fish dish that's simply prepared with risotto, with a wonderful seafood risotto. I always think about the sweetness in scallops marrying up well with that little bit of fruit, that's residual sugar that's left in the first fruit.
And then for people that like white Zinfandels, especially that kind of taste, sweet residual sugar profile, the sweet stamen.
Sweet stamen is I think some cider makers who make sweeter cider often don't put the care into their sweeter products that they do in their drier cider, because frankly, beverages that are sweeter are a bit more forgiving. They can hide a few flaws.
Yep.
But I feel that every cider we make needs to express the fruit as best it can. And we put just as much energy and thought into cider making with our sweet stamen as we do with our serious cider.
Mm.
And in fact, we use one of my favorite apples in the sweet stamen. We use the Ashmead's Kernel, which is a very high acid apple. And because you have a bit more residual sugar, that full-flavored apple those full-flavored apple notes in this blend. You need some acidity to balance it because, as you know with wine, everything is about balance.
Yeah. And I love your suggestions of the sweet Stamen cider with spicy foods, barbecue, Thai dishes, rich spicy stews.
Absolutely. And I'd like to give a shout-out for our consulting cider maker, Jocelyn Kuzelka, who really is the architect and the hands-on cider maker here at Foggy Ridge. She is quite learned in the cider world and consults with cider makers really around the country. And we're very lucky that Jocelyn, who has 2 master's degrees and a lot of experience in the winemaking world as well, we're so lucky that she lives just around the corner in Patrick Springs and really is our cider maker here at Foggy Ridge. And she's the architect of these blends that we've been talking about.
Whoa, that is so cool. So anybody else that might be interested, they could get up with you and you could introduce them to Jocelyn.
Absolutely. And I think that also highlights another exciting thing in the cider world. You know, we're still learning. Cider is a historic beverage, but the first full-time cider maker was licensed in 1974, Terry Maloney, a dear friend of mine who passed away a few years ago in Massachusetts. So we're still learning about fermentation. We're learning what apples make great cider, what apples make good cider, what apples don't make very good cider at all. And Jocelyn is really at the forefront of that. She has published some of her research in a fermentation handbook that was recently put out by G.W. Kent, a very well-known wine lab in California. And I like to think, as you mentioned earlier, we're making cider inspired by tradition, but we are very much at the forefront of using modern cider making techniques.
Diane, we're almost out of time. I want to mention also the Foggy Ridge cider, the handmade in 500 milliliter, and the Pip and Gold dessert cider in 375 milliliter.
Yes, the Pip and Gold is a lot of fun. We're one of the few people making this cider. It's a blend of hard cider and apple brandy. So it is technically a port. It's 18% alcohol. It's lightly sweet, and I love it with blue cheese and walnuts.
Oh, my gosh. And this cider handmade, what is the distinction about that?
Handmade is a little bit of a departure for us, in part because of the packaging. It's in a 500-milliliter bottle, kind of a 2-serving bottle.
Okay.
But it is mostly the Newtown Pippin apple, or Albemarle Pippin, as we call it here in Virginia. We put a little bit of Gold Rush in it. This year, we're probably going to put a little bit of Arkansas Black, but it's mostly Newtown Pippin, and that's a wonderful apple with very soft tannins. That cider is very quaffable and just delicious with sharp cheese.
Well, this conversation has to be continued. I'm going to request an interview with Jocelyn with your help.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I know she'd enjoy chatting with you.
Diane Flint, cider maker, founder of Foggy Ridge Cider in Doug'sburg, Virginia. We thank you so very much for your time today.
You're welcome, Lynn.
We will have links up for you to learn more, to order and find out distribution. The website is foggyridgecider.com. Spectacular. It will absolutely blow your mind. This is the new beverage of choice. Delicious. You're listening to Wine and Dine. You're listening to iWine Radio.